Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. Today, with technical glitches, I'm having to resort to my laptop. Hopefully, the audio will be just as good as normal. Meanwhile, Biden's been busted after Republicans discover a leaked email and demand that he resign immediately. Get this. New shocking details of the criminal activity of the Biden crime family have surfaced in D.C., and parties are scrambling to explain to the American people about a previously undisclosed email chain from 2015 when Democrat Joe Biden was vice president and on his way to Ukraine for an official visit with his son, Hunter Biden, curiously in tow. Media reports show that this previously ignored email chain revealed the motive and ultimate purpose behind Hunter Biden's affiliation at the time with a Ukraine energy company named Burisma Holdings. The new information gives new understanding of Joe Biden's actions when demanding the removal of the Ukrainian prosecutor from the Ukrainian case that we now know involved Hunter Biden. All I've seen is more confirmation that he, in fact, threatened to withhold funds from Ukraine if they didn't fire a prosecutor for investigating Burisma, where, as Crackhead said, son happened to sit on the board when he had no legal authority to do so. Fox News reported that in the month leading up to former Vice President Biden's visit to Ukraine, during which he issued a threat to withhold $1 billion in U.S. aid unless Ukrainian leaders dismiss their top prosecutor, there were discussions between Hunter Biden and Burisma execs regarding a potential contract aimed at countering any federal investigations concerning Burisma's founder and then President Mykola Solchevsky. The sequence of events that led to the firing of Viktor Shokin and the subsequent comments by then Vice President Biden raised serious concerns as to what machinations were really at play and were purposefully concealed from the American people. Representative Virginia Fox, Republican of North Carolina, a member of the House Oversight and Accountability Committee, told Fox News Digital, "No matter how you slice Hunter Biden's involvement, it screams public corruption at the highest levels and must be fully investigated." The calm, judicious, steady reveal of incredibly condemning evidence that clearly incriminates a Biden crime family will eventually alarm even the most ardent supporters of this White House occupier, added Representative Clay Higgins, Republican of Louisiana, who also sits on the committee. Our president is compromised. He should resign and be forever condemned. And the Democrat Party should begin rebuilding itself, he noted. Conservative Brief reported on more details. On November 2, 2015, BRISMA executive Vladim Pozygarsarski emailed Hunter Biden, who is serving as a BRISMA board member, his associate Devin Archer, a fellow board member, and Rosemont Seneca Partners president Eric Sherwin, about a revised proposal contract and initial invoice for BRISMA Holding from lobbying from Blue Star Strategies, according to emails from Hunter Biden's abandoned laptop, which have been verified by Fox News Digital. Pozygarsarski emphasized in his email that the ultimate purpose of the agreement with Blue Star Strategies was to shut down any cases, pursuits against Nikolai in Ukraine, referring to Zelichevsky, who also went by Nikolai. "My only concern is for us to be on the same page regarding our final goals," wrote Pozygarsarski. "With this in mind, I would like us to formulate a list of deliverables, including, but not limited to, a concrete course of action, including meetings, communication resulting in high-ranking U.S. officials in Ukraine, U.S. ambassador, and in U.S. publicly or in private, communication, comment expressing their positive opinion and support of Nikolai Burisma to the highest level of decision makers here in Ukraine. President of Ukraine, President Chief of Staff, Prosecutor General, etc. The scope of work should also include organization of a visit of a number of widely recognized and influential current and or former U.S. policymakers to Ukraine in November, aiming to conduct meetings with and bring positive signal message and support to Nikolai's issue to the Ukrainian top officials above, with the ultimate purpose to close down for any cases pursuits against Nikolai in Ukraine," Pozygarsarski continued. After joining Burisma, Hunter Biden allegedly facilitated a connection between the company and Blue Star Strategies in an effort to combat corruption allegations targeting Zelichevsky. In 2021, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Delaware initiated a federal investigation into the lobbying practices of the firm. The same office, under U.S. Attorney David Weiss, is also conducting a federal investigation into Hunter Biden's commercial activities. "I would tell Bladham that this is definitely done deliberately to be on the safe and cautious side, and that Sally and company understand the scope and deliverables," Sherwin wrote to Hunter Biden and Archer the same day as he forwarded Pozygarsarski's message, "and that we will be having regular, daily, weekly, monthly opportunities to be in through conference calls or memos to be continually refining and updating the scope." Hunter Biden responded to Pozygarsarski, writing that he would like to have one last conversation with Blue Star, later stating he was comfortable with the company. "You should go ahead and sign," he wrote on November 5th, 2015. Looking forward to getting started on this under Biden, noted further. Fox News added, the email exchange came 1 month before then Vice President Biden traveled to Ukraine's capital of Kiev, where he gave a speech about rooting out corruption in politics. How ironic is that? Before Joe Biden's trip, a Blue Star Strategies associate emailed company execs along with Hunter Biden, Archer, and Volzhensky about a White House conference call that outlined the trip's agenda and addressed several questions regarding U.S. policy toward Ukraine. During his visit, Biden exerted pressure on Ukrainian officials to dismiss Shokin, who was investigating Soloshevsky at the time. Shokin was ultimately fired in March of 2016, less than 4 months after Biden's trip. Biden later bragged on video during a conference in 2018 that was with the Council on Foreign Relations that he had threatened to withhold $1 billion in U.S. aid unless Shokin was fired. He was bragging about it right there in a public conference, boasting about his corrupt act of interfering with internal criminal investigation by the Ukraine government, which then I would suggest still had a remaining ounce of integrity. Then President Trump's first impeachment involved allegations of a very similar quid pro quo, withholding of U.S. military aid unless President Volodymyr Zelensky assisted the U.S. Attorney General with that investigation into the Bidens. But what Trump was doing was in the interests of law enforcement and rooting out criminal activities by the then vice president on behalf of his son, Hunter Biden, who may be as corrupt a figure as we've ever had on the national political stage. It's absolutely stunning. With more and more evidence coming out of the Biden crime family, I do not see any realistic prospect for the Democrats running Biden as their presidential candidate in 2024. I'm given to understand that real authentic polling shows that his approval rating is down to 9%, which sounds to me accurate given all his misstatements, his fumbling. Did you see that gobbling of the little girl? How repulsive was that? She was repulsed. Completely disgusting. I can't see how Biden could get any votes at all under these circumstances, and therefore I submit the plan will be, by hook or by crook, to replace Biden not with Kamala Harris, who's an utter airhead and would not gain the support of the nation under any circumstances, or even, now I'm taking into account their best efforts to rig the election, even using Dominion voting machines all over again, even resorting to drop boxes and truckloads of ballots arriving after the election had been closed. I do not believe those techniques would be sufficient to save either a Biden candidacy or a Kamala candidacy, where she has earned universal contempt. If there were ever a more brainless boob in a high office in the United States, I have yet to see any who come close to Kamala Harris. And we know her history of making her promotions on her back, beginning with Willie Brown in California, who was then the most powerful political figure as a head of the California State Assembly, put her on a couple of prestigious committees while they were having an affair. How's that for qualifications? That ought to fit right in with the Biden admin's agenda of identity politics and basing promotions and other considerations on race and gender, except her sex was straight. Perhaps if she'd had a lesbian affair, that would make her a stronger candidate in the eyes of the Democrat Party. Disgusting. Meanwhile, Ron DeSantis' campaign has fallen on hard times. Here's a fascinating piece about what's going on now on the other side of the aisle. GOP Incorporated decides to throw more candidates at Trump after DeSantis missteps. Being offered a giant sack with dollar signs on it must be an incredible temptation, especially for someone in the political world. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was lured by the billionaire class into challenging President Trump for the Republican nomination. This was despite the advice of every mega person out there, including yours truly, who thought he should wait for 2028. Now that the DeSantis campaign finds itself on life support, the Republican elites, who are as far from mega as Karine Jean-Pierre, are looking around for some more candidates to throw at into the race. GOP consultants are now saying that the billionaire class is very close to cutting their losses with DeSantis. They're now starting to court Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin and Georgia Governor Brian Kemp with sacks of money. So far, Glenn Youngkin doesn't seem interested in taking the bait. He's obviously seen what has happened to DeSantis so far. Youngkin has kind of managed to stay above the never Trump fray and hasn't done anything too memorable to lick the MAGA movement, to tick the MAGA movement off. If he stays in his current spot and keeps governing Virginia well, you could see him being a viable candidate in 2028. Brian Kemp, on the other hand, is a Trump-hating neocon who had fit right in at a luncheon with Obama, Hillary, and Jeb. In fact, Kemp regularly hangs out with former Speaker of the House, John Boehner. In the aftermath of the stolen 2020 election, Kemp hid from Georgia voters and let his corrupt Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, handle the fallout. When Georgia MAGA voters went to Kemp office in 2020 to serve him with millions of petition signatures, asking him to not certify the stolen votes without an audit first, I'm pretty sure Kemp climbed out of the window to get away from them. He seems like exactly the sort of guy who would take the money and try to play campaign roulette against Donald Trump. He's in his second term, so what has he got to lose? It's not just that Ron DeSantis has angered the incredibly loyal MAGA base, which we all warned would happen. It's that the campaign consultants with marketing degrees from Harvard, who take selfies of their lunches to prove to post on social media, are running such an incredibly bad campaign for him. These people are stunningly bad at their jobs. They can't do anything right. They haven't observed their main opponent, Donald Trump, to see how he drives media cycles and generates excitement. All that they can come up with is what they were taught in their marketing and poli-sci courses when they were in college. Here's just one example. And I hope this is the last time I ever give these idiots any advice. Not that they're going to read this and do some self-reflection anyway. To compete with Donald Trump, you have to do things that make the media attack you. If the media is not attacking you, you're not gaining any ground with Trump voters. If the media is not threatened by your existence, Trump voters will simply ignore you, which is what you deserve. Donald Trump sucked all the oxygen out of the room over the weekend. He went to UFC 290 with his friendly, loyal friend, Dana White, and hung out with Mel Gibson and other right-wing stars. This is right as the movie Sound of Freedom about child trafficking has sparked the interest of most of us in the political right. Mel Gibson did the final editing on the film and is a longtime collaborator with his star, Jim Cavazzelli. Immediately after UFC 290, Dana White announced that he was buying tickets to the film for every member of his staff. All this happened after everyone realized that the movie was turning out to be a runaway summer hit with conservatives. The DeSantis campaign could have countered that easily last week. Buy a pair of tickets to the movie. Take a photo of the ticket stub. Tweet the photo with something simple like date night. The media would have spent the entire weekend calling Ron and Casey DeSantis a couple of QAnon conspiracy nuts, and then wondered why DeSantis suddenly rose a point or two in the polls. Too late now. The DeSantis campaign probably has until the end of the month before the donor checks dry up. If he doesn't make some progress before then, look for Brian Kemp, more likely, or Glenn Youngkin, less likely, to jump into the race before the first debates take place. Now that, I believe, is a very, very accurate depiction of what's going on here. Very, very serious. Very appropriate. Some are even suggesting the campaign is all over because Trump has it in the bag. I think that's more or less the case. There's no one who can even compare to Trump in terms of polling or on any other ground that is going to invite the attention of the American people or of Republican voters, much less MAGA supporters. Meanwhile, there's an absolutely stunning piece about what's going on with our U.S. military going woke. Just absolutely unbelievable. Get this. New Joint Chiefs Chairman wants white male officers to be a minority. Wow. When I was working on the David Horowitz Freedom Center's disloyal military investigation, I predicted that former Air Force Chief of Staff Charles Q. Brown would be selected as the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The media is now reporting that Biden will indeed pick Brown to replace Milley. And as bad as Milley was, expect Brown to be much worse. Under General Brown, the Air Force had become the most woke of the major service branches. Brown disgraced himself in his uniform during the Black Lives Matter race riots by releasing a video in which he seemed to be barely contain his rage while ranting that the ideals of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution that I sworn my adult life to support and defend have not always delivered liberty and equality to all. What horrible acts of oppression did one of the most powerful men in the military experience that made him turn on America? In his own words to People magazine, when you get to senior levels, you have reserved parking spots around the base. I was in civilian clothes. I parked in a spot and someone came out and said, that spot is reserved with a specific Air Force commander. And I go, yeah, I know, because I am the Pacific Air Force commander. Someone questioned Brown's parking space once, and all the white male officers must pay. What should we expect from Brown if he becomes chairman of the Joint Chiefs? Last year, Brown alongside Undersecretary of the Air Force Gina Ortiz Jones, the first gay and Filipino woman in her role, and other leaders, signs their name to one of the most shocking and destructive racist documents ever produced by the modern military. The topic of the Air Force memorandum was officer quotas set by race and gender. Similar quotas had been issued by political appointees in a politically correct military, but they had focused on slowly boosting minority officers rather than calling for a purge of white men. The 2014 quotas had looked for an 80% white, 10% black, 8% Asian officer corps, while choosing officers by any racial category rather than merit is racist, wrong, and illegal under the Civil Rights Act, anti-discrimination laws. This fell short of Brown's proposed racist purge. Brown's quotas limit the number of white officers to 67% and cut white men down to 43%. The Air Force Corps Officer Corps is currently 77% white, getting it down to 67%, a reduction of 10%, would require serious efforts to purge white officers and bar the door to any new ones. Reducing the number of white men in the Officer Corps to a minority of 43% would cripple the service and wipe out generations of talent, especially when 86% of pilots are white. What do you do with those 86% of white male pilots? General Brown and his radical allies who are destroying the Air Force and endangering national security claim that their racist and illegal policy is necessary because diversity and inclusion are key to the success of any organization. And that requires 7% multiracial officers. How absurd is this?
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
There's more about Brown's racially based decimation of the Air Force, rendering the United States virtually incapable of maintaining its own military defense. But if that's the case, then why have Air Force readiness rates continue to drop, even as the service became more diverse? Brown's focus on diversity and inclusiveness has been a disaster. The Air Force has not met its aircraft readiness rates and the mission critical rates for fighter jets is catastrophic. The F-35A rate fell from 76% to 68% from 2020, the year the Air Force went woke, endorsed Black Lives Matter, enforced racial struggle sessions upon its officers. That was the year White House nominated Brown as chief of staff. In 2022, the rate fell to an outrageous 54%. That's barely one in two available planes. In a major war, rates like these would mean we would lose and hundreds of thousands of our people could die. An Air Force chief of staff who presided over such a disaster should have been shown the door, unwelcome to work for even the worst and sleaziest defense contractors. Instead, in a triumph for ideology over national security, I repeat, in a triumph for ideology over national security, Biden reportedly wants Brown to be the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Considering how much damage he's already done, imagine how much more devastation he will be able to wreak on the military in even more senior positions. A recent war game predicted that we could lose 900 planes in a clash with China over Taiwan, with the Air Force losing as much as a third of its fighter attack strengths. Readiness rates like those on Brown's watch and the loss of the talented pilots he wants to see gone because of the color of their skin and their sex would be the margin between victory and catastrophic defeat. When taking office, General Brown unveiled his Accelerate Change or Lose program. He accelerated change and the Air Force lost. It'll go on losing until it cleans house. Brown doesn't have a vision for beating China. He has a vision of an Air Force with 4.5% male multiracial officers, 3.5% female Asian officers, and only 43% white male officers. That's not a plan to win a foreign war with the best people, but to win a domestic identity politics war while perhaps securing some payback over his long-lost parking space. General Charles Q. Brown, Jr. has overseen a service dominated by high-ranking racists with little to show for their time except racial division and a service branch in even worse shape. Bear in mind, we're talking about anti-white racism. Most of us historically have thought of anti-discrimination laws as protecting only minority populations, especially black. But anti-discrimination laws also prohibit discrimination based upon the color of your skin, even if you're white and have heretofore been in the majority. So it's a double-edged sword. It cuts both ways. And races like Brown are violating United States law, some of the most meaningful race-related legislation in the nation's history. I am a black man who happens to be the chief master sergeant of the Air Force. Caleth Wright, now retired, has tweeted, "You don't know the anxiety, the despair, the heartache, the fear, the rage, and the disappointment that comes with living in this country every single day." And by the way, the chief master sergeant of the Air Force is among the highest non-commissioned positions held by personnel in the Air Force. The sergeant major of the Air Force would rank higher. This guy would be in the top three of the non-commissioned officers. Remember, every military is divided into the commissioned officers, the lieutenants, captains, majors, colonels, generals, versus the enlisted branch, the non-commissioned officers, the corporals, the sergeants, the gunnery sergeants, the first sergeants, the sergeant majors, where I guarantee you the backbone of a military organization resides with a sergeant, especially those ranked staff sergeant or above. Anthony Cotton, the commander of U.S. Strategic Command, has claimed, "When I see what happened to Aubrey Aubrey, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, Rayshard Brooks, and the list goes on, that could be me." Last year, Cotton claimed that diversity, inclusion, are tools for national defense, and that diversity is a war-fighting imperative. Earlier this year, six Air Force officers were fired over failed safety nuclear inspection, but Cotton got promoted. Shame on us if we miss this opportunity to make a change that's required across our Air Force to make it better, Brown had berated, because the racial composition of personnel was still at least somewhat based on merit and ability rather than on his own racial preferences. Is the Air Force going to be somehow better when it meets Brown's quota of, say, 0.5% Hawaiian female officers? What be stronger when the World War II Air Force, whose men broke the aerial forces of Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, the Newark Air Force, is struggling with recruitment? Surprise, surprise. With readiness rates, and couldn't even manage to spot China's spy balloons. General Brown has overseen a national security crisis as one of the crown jewels of national defense, and as a reward, Biden would like to make this failed racist the nation's highest-ranking military officer. General Milley talked about studying white rage. General Brown is suffused with his own racist rage that has led him to wreck the Air Force and, before long, the entire U.S. military. Brown has decided that white male officers should be a minority in the Air Force. Is there any doubt that he would want to see a similar purge of white men across the entire military? With recruitment already an uphill battle, and I add, they're dropping standards, both physical, mental, and moral. As in the past, you had to be physically fit, mentally straight, and morally acceptable. They're now varying to allow misdemeanors and probably felonies to be acceptable in new recruits who are below the average intelligence and not even physically competent. This is turning the Air Force, the military, into a remedial education project, which is far removed from its ostensive objective of being competent to defend the nation in time of war. With recruitment already an uphill battle, the military cannot afford a woke push to drive away the fighting men who have traditionally given their lives and fought for their country. Nor can it risk putting woke racism ahead of competence and merit. Republicans failed to take a stand against Brown's elevation to Air Force Chief of Staff. If they do not stand up against his elevation as Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, they have no one to blame for the damage and lives lost that will follow from Chairman Brown's tenure. Wow! I'm telling you, that is stunning stuff. Meanwhile, as a positive development, judge issues huge ruling, blocks DOJ and major case involving Trump. The Justice Department's request in a case involving lawsuits by former FBI agent Peter Strzok and Lisa Page was denied by a federal judge. Now, for those of you unfamiliar, Peter Strzok was an FBI agent. Lisa Page in the Department of Justice, they had an affair. What's important, however, is that they fabricated evidence against Trump, Peter Strzok declaring he would make sure personally that Trump never became president. They were deeply involved in the Russiagate fiasco. I even have a book about it, exposing the Russiagate hoax. It's outrageous what's happened here. Their lawsuit had no merit from the beginning. I'm very glad to see that it's been denied now by a federal judge. According to NBC News last week, President Joe Biden's DOJ was attempting to stop former President Trump from testifying in court to determine whether he met with and directly pressured FBI and Justice Department officials to fire Strzok or urged any White House aides to do so in two lawsuits. In response to the Justice Department's request for the court to reconsider an earlier decision allowing Strzok's attorney to proceed with a deposition of Trump, in the lawsuit Strzok and Lisa Page filed against the Department of Justice and FBI in 2019, because they were in fact fired, U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson issued her order. According to NBC News, the DOJ contended that additional information, such as FBI Director Christopher Wray's testimony and written declarations from other government officials acquainted with Trump's interaction with Strzok and Page, called for reexamining the deposition involving the former president. The Justice Department attorneys wrote, "The available of that evidence to Mr. Strzok means the deposition of former President Trump is not appropriate," which furthered their earlier defense of the Apex Doctrine, which state that officials are typically exempt from depositions unless they have firsthand knowledge of the matter and the information cannot be obtained through alternative means. That is all to the good. Meanwhile, there are a number of developments vis-a-vis Ukraine that are worth reviewing, including that any attempt to retake Crimea would kill 200,000 Ukrainians. Get this. Crimea invasion would kill 200,000 Ukrainian soldiers, according to a former Zelensky aide. The cost of invading Crimea would be too high for Kiev, a former advisor to Ukrainian president. Here it says Vladimir, but I think it's Volodymyr Zelensky. Alkersi Arestovich said this week, the operation would likely lead to hundreds of thousands of casualties, he told a Russian journalist. There are few prospects of seizing the Crimean Peninsula through military means, Arestovich said, discussing the options remaining to Kiev in its conflict with Moscow. What will be the cost? Extermination of 200,000 of the adult male population, he asked, referring to the number of soldiers Ukraine would likely lose. Ukraine's economy could also be totally destroyed in the process. Kiev is already totally dependent on its Western backers, the former presidential advisor said. Should the U.S. and its allies stop supplying Ukrainian troops with weapons, they would not only be unable to take back territories that joined Russia, but would struggle to defend their current positions. Arestovich also charged that Washington and its allies are pursuing their own interests in the conflict. Let's be honest. Our foreign policy goals in this war contrast sharply with the foreign policy goals of our sponsors and backers, he said, adding that the West is willing to sacrifice Ukrainian lives to achieve the desired outcome. Ukraine can now only influence Western leaders at an emotional level, the former presidential advisor said, adding that Kiev should have focused on building up its own sovereignty instead. We need relations based on real profits. That's the only thing they, the West, understand, he added, that immoral policies and inability to take serious decisions are the major weakness of the West. However, Ukraine cannot just abandon its Western backers and pursue its own goals at any cost, the former advisor stated, saying this would be a dead end for Kiev. And the only correlation would be the prospect of joining NATO in exchange for peace with Russia. Stop the war and join NATO? Many people say it's an historic chance. He also described NATO guarantees in exchange for consenting to peace with Russia along the current contact line as a fairly good deal. A fairly good deal. According to him, the government would also likely require the West to lift some of the sanctions on Russia to convince Moscow to agree to the terms. His remarks come amid the much-touted Ukrainian summer offensive, which has failed to bring about significant changes on the battlefield almost a month and a half after it was launched. Ukrainian troops have suffered heavy losses, including Western-supplied heavy armor, during their largely unsuccessful attacks on Russian defenses. According to Western media, Kiev's backers has also been frustrated by the slow pace of the operation. Moscow has repeatedly signaled that it's ready for peace talks with Ukraine. It's also blamed Kiev for the lack of progress in diplomacy, citing a decree signed last year by Zelensky that prohibits talks for as long as Russian President Vladimir Putin remains in power. Kiev put forth its own peace plan, demanding Russia withdraw troops from all the territories within Ukraine's 1991 borders. Moscow has rejected the proposal, calling it detached from reality, which is indeed the case. Fascinating stuff. Bear in mind now, this truly is a proxy war, but it's not one between the United States and Russia. It's one between Israel and Russia, using the United States and NATO as its tools, instruments. And Israel wants all of Ukraine, Crimea, the Donbass, kit and caboodle. Israel has no interest whatsoever in any compromise. Israel is going to fight this war to the last American soldier. Meanwhile, Gazprom keeps gas flowing despite the dispute with Ukraine's NAFTA gas. Kremlin-controlled gas giant Gazprom has maintained gas flows to Europe via Sokolenkova Point despite an outgoing transit dispute with Ukraine's NAFTA gas. Ukrainian transit flows have remained stable at slightly above 40 million cubic meters per day, according to data from Gazprom, as reported by Energy Intelligence. Gazprom CEO Alexei Miller had earlier threatened to slap sanctions on NAFTA gas as it continues to pursue an arbitration case for non-payment of transit fines by Gazprom. According to NAFTA gas, the funds were not paid by Gazprom, neither on time nor in full, for the gas transit. Last year, Ukraine suspended the flow of gas through Sokolenkova, which delivers almost a third of the fuel pipe from Russia to Europe through Ukraine. Gazprom has seen its revenues and profits crash after Europe drastically cut gas purchases from Russia after it invaded Ukraine. The company's profits for fiscal year 2022 clocked in at 1.226 trillion rubles, 15.4 billion, 41% lower than in 2021. With the company citing a windfall tax imposed by Moscow last year as a reason for the decline. The state-controlled company has decided not to pay dividends for the entire year 2022, having previously paid an interim dividend of 1.208 billion rubles, $15 billion last autumn for the results recorded in the first half of 2022. Gazprom's Deputy Director General, Famil Sadegov, tried to put a positive spin on the clearly bad situation. We did not wait for the results for the whole year, but offered the shareholders the opportunity to receive in advance a significant amount. Due to this fact, the received dividend have a real value higher than the amount paid at the end of the previous exercise. The weak results have sunk Gazprom shares further, bringing 12-month losses to nearly 10%. However, shares of its Russian oil and gas peers have fared better. Rosneft shares at 54.3%, while Novatek has gained 52.6. That's all pretty significant. But of course, Europe has done itself tremendous damage by going along with or not opposing the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline, which really ultimately, I believe, turns out to be the cause behind the underlying issue behind the entire Ukraine fiasco in large measure for the following reason. Successful commercial relations between Russia and Germany, where Germany would become this, is already, but would have become the economic powerhouse of all of Europe by benefiting from cheap energy from Russia, would indicate that these cordial commercial relations do not warrant apprehension about Russia becoming an adversary or invading Europe. That would mean, of course, that NATO is clearly an anachronism, a relic of the past, no longer necessary, including the purchase of hugely expensive military armaments from the United States. The military-industrial complex, therefore, in nations like the United States that basically exist on a war economy, they need wars to keep the money flowing and the profits surging, led to Biden and Newland declaring even openly that if Russia were to invade Ukraine, Nord Stream would be no more. And Seymour Hersh has explained, of course, how it was done. Russia has complained that the nations that have investigated are not sharing the results, but that's because they point right back to the United States, so that we have induced massive economic harm upon Europe, the populations of the nations that, apart from Israel, which is a class of its own, are supposed to be our closest allies historically. And the results have been catastrophic economically. Meanwhile, by virtue of BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperative Organization, which Iran recently joined, the economy of the world has undergone a transformation that's going to have enduring effects for the United States and our quality of life. Because the petrodollar has been all but abandoned. And since we left the gold standard under Nixon, at the advice or urging of Henry Kissinger, it's only been the use of the dollar in transactions for oil worldwide that has propped it up. That prop is gone.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial
is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, one of the more disturbing developments of late in terms of U.S. support for Ukraine has been sending them cluster bombs, which are outlawed by an international treaty with over 100 signatories, but they do not include the United States, Russia, or Ukraine, in my opinion. That's deplorable. On moral and political grounds, the United States is supposed to be a beacon, not only of freedom and democracy, where we fail miserably, especially with one election stolen after another, but of moral virtue, when it turns out we are anything but. I'd even submit, at this point in time, that the Washington government is among the most corrupt in the world, among the most corrupt in the world. Our treatment of the cluster bomb issue is simply one more illustration, where Biden himself admitted this was a stopgap measure because the U.S. had run out of 155-millimeter howitzer shells to send to Ukraine. Now, as a former artillery officer in the Marine Corps, I can share with you that most deaths in combat are not brought about by the infantry or tanks, but by artillery. That the Ukrainians have been consuming artillery rounds at a phenomenal rate, faster than the West can produce them. This led Mike Adams, among others, 6 months ago to observe that at the rate of consumption, Ukraine was running through munitions, the West would be unable to maintain pace. That would take a year to two to set up the production facilities right here in the USA in order to keep your howitzer rounds coming, and that foreordained that Ukraine would lose the war. And he had it right. And Ukraine is losing the war. And the cluster bombs, frankly, aren't going to make a difference. But here's what's going on. U.S. cluster bombs have arrived in Ukraine. U.S. is shipping them directly from Pentagon stockpiles. A Ukrainian general told CNN Thursday that Ukraine has received a shipment of U.S. cluster bombs, controversial munitions that have a devastating impact on civilians. We just got them. We haven't used them yet, but they can radically change the situation on the battlefield, General Oleksandr Tarnovsky said. The Biden admin announced last week that it was sending Ukraine cluster munitions in the form of 155 military artillery shells as part of an $800 million weapons package. In other words, lacking conventional 155 rounds, they're sending these cluster munitions as a substitute. It's not clear how many have arrived in Ukraine so far, but Pentagon officials have said they will provide hundreds of thousands. The cluster munitions are being provided using the presidential drawdown authority, which allows President Biden to ship Ukraine weapons directly from U.S. military stockpiles. Cluster bombs scatter small submunitions, bomblets, over large areas, say the size of a football field, making them especially hazardous for civilians. Submunitions, bomblets that don't explode immediately on impact, can kill or maim civilians for decades to come, as they have in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos, where the U.S. dropped hundreds of millions of bomblets during the Vietnam War. Because of their indiscriminate nature, cluster bombs have been banned by over 100 countries. But the U.S., Ukraine, and Russia are not signatories to the treaty known as the Convention on Cluster Munitions. The Biden admin has defended arming Kiev with these brutal weapons by saying both the U.S. and Ukraine are running out of conventional artillery ammunition. Secretary of State Blinken said Ukraine would be defenseless without cluster bombs. The administration's rhetoric on cluster munitions has radically changed since the beginning of the war. On February 28, 2022, the White House said the use of cluster bombs in the Ukraine war would be a potential war crime. Well, it still is. Meanwhile, and this was acutely disappointing, House votes down amendment to block cluster bomb shipment to Ukraine. U.S. cluster munitions have already arrived in Ukraine. The House on Thursday, again, just a few days past, voted down an amendment to the 2024 National Defense Authorization Act that would have prohibited the transfer of cluster munition to Ukraine. The amendment was led by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, failed in a vote of 147 to 276. The amendment drew support from 98 Republicans and 49 Democrats. And I say, those 98 Republicans and 49 Democrats deserve a gold star. They did the right thing. 276 members of the House, however, did not. The night before the vote, Republicans on the House Rules Committee voted down the original amendment related to cluster bombs that would have banned the export of the controversial munition to all nations, not just Ukraine, which had bipartisan co-sponsors. The Republicans then added the narrowed-down Green Amendment which was less likely to get Democrat support. Narrowing the amendment to Ukraine made it more of a vote against military aid for Ukraine than a vote against cluster bombs. And there's been virtually no dissent from Democrats on President Biden's Ukraine policy, where we're going to remain as long as it takes. Once again, that's indicative of Israel's control of the government of the United States, where we know our Congress is Israeli-occupied territory. Since Cynthia McKinney revealed the pledge on Iranian television back in 2011, explaining that new members of Congress are asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel even ahead those of the United States, and where virtually every new member of Congress has done so, about 5 years ago. About 5 years ago, my dear friend and colleague in JFK research, Gary King, who also hosts the Inconvenient Truths show, which has proven to be enormously popular, asked me, did I know how many members of the then current Congress had refused to sign the pledge? And when I acknowledged I did not, he raised one finger of one hand. Only one member of that Congress had refused to sign the pledge. So if you want to understand why we're all in on Ukraine, it's because Israel wants Ukraine. They want it all. The Crimea, the Donbass, the other regions that Russia has seized and controls, they want it all. And they're willing to fight this war using every resource at their disposal, including everything the United States can supply. To them, we are an expendable resource. And if we don't do what they want, they'll be held to pay politically and otherwise by virtue of their control of the media, which is enormous. How many times have I reported having panels of executives from CNN, 100 executives, all of whom are dual U.S. Israeli citizens, NBC, another 100 executives, all of whom are dual U.S. Israeli citizens. Even the New York Times, 100 executives, every one of whom is a dual U.S. Israeli citizen. No diversity there. They're controlling the media. This is why you get so little truth. It's all filtered by Israel. It's all presenting a Zionist point of view. And I repeat this again and again, because America's enemy is, in fact, not Russia. America's enemy is the nation that poses as our greatest ally in the Middle East. Bear in mind, I'm talking facts. I'm not talking perceptions. Most Americans still continue to believe Israel is a strong ally of the United States. Well, for those who miss a memo, Israel brought us 9/11. Israel was responsible for the destruction of the World Trade Center. Israel. Ehud Olmert and Bibi Netanyahu appear to have devised a plan to conduct an act that would justify U.S. military coming into the geopolitically sensitive region of the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran. It didn't quite work out that way. Even though it was off to a grand success, Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, among other nations that were taken out, even using NATO as an instrument of devastation, where Libya may have actually had the most humane society in the history of humanity, where Muammar Gaddafi was sharing the oil wealth of Libya with the people, national health care, public education, homes, giving newly married couples $25,000. But he was also undertaking the Great Waterworks Project that would have turned North Africa into a veritable oasis. And he was introducing the gold dinar, which would have rapidly become the currency of all of Africa. Just as BRICS, now introducing a new gold-backed currency, will swiftly replace the U.S. dollar for international commerce, including transactions for oil. And with the decimation of the petrodollar, the quality of life in the United States is going to drop dramatically. Drop dramatically. And that's over and above all the other despicable acts the Biden administration is doing to destroy America. That's what we have under the tutelage and control of Israel. The United States has become a terrorist state. Even if the amendment to block cluster bombs had passed, it would not have blocked current shipments, as they have already begun arriving in Ukraine. And the NDAA still has a long way to go before it becomes law. Both the House and the Senate need to pass their versions, and when the two chambers have to negotiate, then the new chambers will have to negotiate the final draft. The House also voted down amendments put forward by Green and Representative Matt Gaetz, Republican of Florida, to reduce funding for Ukraine. One amendment from Green would have cut $300 million in military aid for Ukraine that's backed into the $886 billion NDAA, but it failed in a vote of 89 to 341. Remember, Israel wants the U.S. to provide all the aid and assistance it can. Gaetz put forward an amendment to cut off all military assistance for Ukraine, which failed in an even more dismal outcome vote of 70 to 358, with only Republicans voting in favor. Meanwhile, the Babylon Bee, whose satire is rooted in reality, has published: Zelensky activates 3,000 U.S. military reservists. Kiev: casualties continue to mount in the ongoing Ukraine-Russia conflict, causing Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to make the decision to call up 3,000 U.S. military reserve soldiers. "I need all the forces I command at my disposal," Zelensky said when announcing the activation of American troops. "These young men and women have been well trained to defend Ukraine, and now is the time to fulfill their purpose." As reports of Russian military advancements continue to filter in from the front lines, Zelensky, the commander of all U.S. armed forces, determined his best option was to call in reinforcements. Pentagon officials were quick to comply. "We're here to follow orders from the top, and it doesn't get any higher up than Mr. Zelensky," said Pentagon spokesman John Kirby. "If President Biden takes orders from him, then we'll do whatever he says as well. the full might of the United States military is at his beck and call. That's right. That's exactly right. Stunning stuff. There's a whole lot more going on out there. Let me just pick out a few more to add to our conversation today. This is very chilling to wit that the villainous NATO summit laid out plans for global domination. This is coming from Strategic Culture, which is a simply excellent publication. The declaration adopted this week by the heads of state and government of the 31 NATO members in Vilnius, Lithuania, is a blueprint for global war. Only a fraction of the 24-page document deals with the central issue of the summit, the war in Ukraine. In the rest, NATO declares its intention to impose its will on the entire world. Hardly any continent or region was left out. And what the document calls NATO's 360-degree approach. The focus of the initial portion of the document is on the conflict with Russia. The Putin government is denounced in language that rules out from the outset any solution to the Ukraine war at the negotiating table. There can be no impunity for its war crimes, and all those responsible must be held accountable, NATO demands. A precondition for peace is Russia's complete and unconditional withdrawal in language directed at Putin. It states, in light of its hostile policies and actions, we cannot consider Russia to be our partner. No shit, Dick Tracy. I mean, the wood of the West is worthless. We know from the Minsk agreements, which were supposed to provide a peaceful resolution, that they were only a stalling tactics to allow Ukraine to be beefed up with more Western military weapons and technology. So Russia cannot believe anything the West promises, no matter how solemnly asserted, Angela Merkel, no less, acknowledged that it was just a fig leaf, just camouflage, to conceal sending massive shipments of weapons to Ukraine in anticipation of the Russian intervention. Now, Russia is not going to relinquish Crimea, the Donbass, or the other regions it has seized. It will not. Therefore, NATO has, really Israel, has created a situation of an immovable object, Russia, being confronted by what has in the past been an irresistible force. Israeli-dominated United States military supplemented by NATO. And I gotta say, and I regard this as so important, that no less an eminence than Jacob Rothschild, who's behind the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum, has declared Vladimir Putin to be an enemy of the New World Order, and asserted that the New World Order cannot proceed absent Ukraine, in which case Russian victory, Ukrainian defeat, is also a defeat of the New World Order and of the Rothschild Empire, you begin to appreciate why this has turned into such a titanic struggle and why Joe Biden would declare that we'll be there as long as it takes. Even though control of Ukraine has no discernible significance for United States national security. This is a dereliction of duty, abuse of power by a criminal administration improperly occupying the White House and controlling the federal government based upon stolen elections and phony media reports. Here's more. Much of the media commentary has focused on the fact that while the Communique asserts that Ukraine's future is in NATO, it does not lay out a specific timeline for membership. As Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has called for, instead, it states that Ukrainian membership will happen at some future date when allies agree and conditions are met. For tactical reasons, the major NATO powers, particularly the U.S. and Germany, decided that now is not the time for formal Ukrainian membership, which would trigger Article 5 and deprive the Biden admin of its politically useful fiction that the United States is not at war with Russia. When I return, we'll take your calls.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We have a familiar voice on the line. Paul, join the conversation.
All right. How you doing there, my friend? Okay.
Hanging in there, Paul. Hanging in there.
It's hard with all the news, huh? Or the so-called news. So I was thinking about this idea of cluster bombs and all the things that you talk about in our history. And you know, I guess it was something the so-called founding fathers would never foresee, you know, when they established the three branches of government, right, that someday we're going to be voting on, something like cluster bombs. What a world we live in, huh?
Indeed, indeed. I mean, the founding fathers had principle. They were very dedicated to the best interests of the nation, precisely the opposite of the present fraudulent administration, which is doing everything it can to destroy America, and with great effect, including moving this loon, this racist lunatic, from Chief of Staff of the Air Force to Chairman of the Joint Chief, Paul. This is a colossal blunder. If you care about America and its national defense. But of course, when you recognize their objective is to weaken America and to destroy its national defense, it's the perfect move to make.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the concept of America, which, let's face it, it's essentially a concept, is officially over, unfortunately. You know, I didn't kill it, but you know, the underlying infrastructure of what was America, you know, in other words, white Europeans building a nation, and of course originally supposedly founded on English common law or natural law, that's as you know, has gone bye-bye. And you know, it's up to us, as you know, what we're instructed to do, to alter or abolish it, right? We're given that proscription, and that's the only thing that's going to work is to, I don't think there's any altering the current system, to be honest with you. And if you've ever listened to, and I don't know, I'm sure you're familiar with Mike Gatti and the work that he's done on the Constitution and the so-called founding fathers, but we really do need a whole new, quote, constitution based upon the Articles of Confederation in the main. Because what they did, if we could sum it up best, is they set up a permanent aristocracy funded by the unlimited taxing power of the federal government. That's what they did. So the idea of a constitutional republic was a fraud and a lie from the start. And there are many people that objected to what was going on. And this is one of the many things that Mike Gatti has uncovered in his archival research and reading the letters of many of these people, not the least of which, of course, was Patrick Henry, but many others as well joined him in not just their skepticism, but their forewarning of what was actually created, which I think the best summation of it is they permanent aristocracy funded by the unlimited taxing power of the U.S. government. Hence, we have a situation today where now we have aliens in control of this federal unlimited taxing power so that we can have such things as unlimited wars everywhere and anywhere and terrible things such as cluster bombs.
And when you mention aliens, of course, you're not talking about extraterrestrials, but foreigners, in particular dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, if I read you right.
Well, of course, as I've made, I believe it was me that made the phrase, the South Koreans famous. Other people have used other phrases, but I am pretty sure those people that are honest would credit me with the fact that I used to refer to them as the South Koreans. But we all know who they are. They've always been regarded as aliens to every culture that they're in, right? They're not the native culture. They are who they are. I'm tired of saying the word. You know the word. I've said it so many times, and I'm not going to say it on this show, which is rare. But, yeah, they don't even regard themselves as white, as you may know, and you can hear quotes of various members of this tribe saying, oh, you know, but we're not white.
Yes, I find it very peculiar. What are they if they're not white? What are they? They sure look white to me. What are they, Paul?
That's a famous line, by the way, of Jared Taylor, American Renaissance, where, you know, people have mocked him saying, well, they look white to me. But no, of course, they're an admixture. Historically, they've always been regarded as an sort of a Turkic, Mongol, or Asiatic race. They were never considered European or Western. They were always considered Asiatic. And in the main, they were a Turkic, Mongol admixture, which, of course, now has bred with Slavs and bred with Aryans. So that's why you get a somewhat variety in their looks. However, we can all still see the classic features that have remained unchanged for centuries. When you see the caricatures, by the way, people have always caricatured this race going back many, many centuries. You can see drawings and cartoons where, you know, the people that look like Harvey Weinstein and Larry Silverstein and, you know, what's his name, Chuck Schumer, that this physiognomy has been predominant for a very long time. And, of course, there's variations of it, but I can spot them just like many, many other people can spot them. And then there's other times you can't, like, for example, Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner has a very European or even an Aryan-looking face, but obviously he claims to be a member of this tribe, so, of course, they can have it.
Well, I'm looking up shades of white, Paul, and we get beige, we get eggshell, Navajo white, other variations. Would they describe their own color as eggshell or beige? I mean, if they're not white, what color are they?
Well, of course, I was not referring to the color. I was referring to the race or the ethnicity. So
yeah, but Paul, they're saying... All right, you're saying simply genetically, but if you had to qualify, I mean, the word white is used in multiple different senses. So you're saying they declare they're not white, meaning genetically they're not European or Anglo-Saxon or Nordic or what have you, which no one would dispute. It's just very damn. Go ahead.
They're not racially white. And I could send you all kinds of clips. I don't need to. I'm sure you believe me.
No, I know that they so declare themselves. It's just, to me, strange, but I think you've answered it. We got Brian here on the line. Paul, I want to come back to you to elaborate on your reason for thinking the Constitution established, in effect, an aristocracy. It's never been obvious to me that that was the case, but I'm open to your arguments. Meanwhile, let me bring in Brian for his introductory salvo. Brian, your thoughts.
What you're missing is their Neanderthals. If you look at Neanderthals, they have a sloped forehead, they're barrel-chested, and they have short limbs. When you look at Benjamin Netanyahu, he's a classic Neanderthal. I went to the motor vehicle department, and the woman behind the counter had such a sloped forehead, I just couldn't believe it. And she was big chested. If they're women, they have huge cup sizes, and she had short limbs. and she was just a classic Neanderthal. My coffee shop has a Jewish guy, and he's a great guy. He's a delight, but man, is he ever a classic Neanderthal. And it's basically a war between the Neanderthals and the Cro-Magnons. God's chosen people are us, the Aryans, and they are the devil's chosen people, and they're Neanderthals. If you were aware of it, you'll see it.
This is fascinating because you're talking about stages in the evolution of man, and yet I have interpreted you as a denier of evolution.
Well, it's...
Now, Jim, go ahead, Brian.
They're different. It's not evolution. They're just different. They're Neanderthals. I mean, and when you're aware of it, Jim, you will notice it, okay? But you have to be made aware of it, and then you'll see it. Okay, just
you know, I published books on evolution. I mean, this is fascinating to me because the Neanderthal characterization is something never before have I encountered. That's extremely enticing. I really find that fascinating, Ryan.
Where have you been?
I missed the memo.
Just like the Khazars, okay?
Go ahead, Brian.
If you look at where the Neanderthals centered, it is Ukraine. That's where they're from. Okay, but the populations of them that were left over are from that area.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're different, and it's like a divine war between God's chosen people and the devil's chosen people. They happen to be the devil's chosen people, and they are trying everything they can to annihilate the Cro-Magnon, the Aryans. And, you know, it's just so obvious. Okay. So, you know that, Jim, once you see it, and go on, I'm sorry.
No, so I was just going to say, if you can allow me to interject to make this clear and very easy for Jim. So again, Jim, once again, I could send you all sorts of links. The reason I don't is because time after time after time, you don't actually look at the stuff I send you. Okay. But anyway, the anthropology on this is pretty straightforward and clear, Jim. And I think you being, you know, the scientific, you know, reasoning and rationale background that you have, you would not fail to see, you know, the analysis has been done by many others in terms of the skulls. They'll show Neanderthal skulls, Cro-Magnon, you know, skulls, Homo erectus, and they'll show the differences, and then they'll basically superimpose these facial and skull features on modern individual examples. And there's no doubt about the fact.
I'm not closed-minded. I find it a fascinating hypothesis, and on its face, I would be inclined to grant it. It appears to fit the data. That's really striking.
Okay, so just let me finish this out. So you did that thing with, like, you know, Noah Posner and all this, right? And talked about how it was the same guy that you did that series of facial comparisons, and you fast forward to him as a young man, and same kid, right?
Yeah, it was so Michael Vabner. That Noah Posner is a fiction created out of photographs of Michael Vabner as a child, yes.
Okay, gotcha. So exactly, this same sort of work has been done on skulls and faces, and you can find it, and there's no denying it. So you can go right past the fact if you're open to it or you're fascinated by it. You just have to accept what Brian is telling you is basically extremely accurate. And I've mentioned it to you before. And, you know, essentially, it's not just the physiological anatomical differences, but as I've made the point, behavior is, in many ways, genetic or innate, okay? Now, people, of course, have, characteristics and manners, and people can learn how to act. They can learn social graces. But in the main, the temperament or character or the innate behavior is passed down in the animal kingdom and as well as in man. So there's a reason stereotypes exist, and there's a reason that certain groups of people have a reputation, and because it's based in reality. So that's all Brian and and other people have tried to communicate to you over the years.
One thing I can point out, is when you've got people like Kushner who appear to be Nordic in Khazaria on their west flank were the Magyars. They were a tribe that originated in like Finland, Norway, that area. So they were Nordic, and they migrated down and were on the western side of Khazaria, and they were allies of the Khazarians. Okay, they kind of helped keep invaders out from the west, and so they integrated with them and they bred with them, and that's why you'll get blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jews if you go way back. They're Magyars.
That's fascinating. Paul, I'd welcome if you send me a couple of these physical anthropology studies. I'd love that. When I was an undergraduate, probably the most broadening course I took was in cultural anthropology, and it just was wonderful. And one of my favorite TV series is Bones, about a forensic physical anthropologist solving crimes based on the study of bones. I find all this fascinating. So I'd welcome send me a couple of what you take to be the best studies on this subject, and I'll take a look.
You know, the best would be the ones that come out of Nazi Germany, out of National Socialists. You know, they had all this stuff on that. And, of course, what you get here is going to be diluted, but there you'll get, you know, you'll get the truth. So I'm sorry.
Paul can figure out which ones. You're welcome to send to Brian, if you've got something you want to send.
No, I don't have any.
No, that's what I was going to say. I want Brian to send it because Jim doesn't look at the stuff I send him generally.
I'm asking you to send something, Paul. I'm going to look at it.
Paul, I'll tell you what, you got a price to say. You got a price to pay with me. I want you to read 40% of Death Object, Exploding the Nuclear Weapons Hoax by Akio Nakatani. When you consume 40% of that, I'll send you new links on other topics. I'm a bastard, Jim, I'm telling you. But here's what I was going to say. You know what's more fascinating, Jim, besides this limited slice of physical anthropology, the differences between, you know, Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon, et cetera? It's this amazing world, this universe that we live in, and I just don't think we even know the half of it. I think we've been lied to about so much history, and you take a look at the fantastic variety of life, and even among so-called humankind, right? There was dwarfs, there's pygmies, there's all these various races, and there's variety in each race. In other words, each race is a spectrum, right? There's a spectrum of white people, there's a spectrum of black people, and so on. And, of course, as you may know, Jim, seeing the photos that Brian and I have seen, there were giants. There were various races of giants on this earth in the past. I have zero doubt about that. And that's been covered up as part of our history. So where did all this wonderful diversity come from? And, you know, what exactly is this force, this science called evolution? I'm not sure that the model that's been promoted of ever-increasing complexity based upon mutation or natural selection or adaptation is really viable. I don't really know what's going on. A lot of people conflate this idea of evolution with natural selection or adaptation, which, of course, are observable and easy to understand. But where did all the different races come from, and where is all this variety of life coming from? You know, it's just, to me, it's an absolutely amazing, fantastic world. And I just don't think saying the word evolution or calling evolution a science or a fact does anything to explain.
Well,
I agree.
None of us can compensate for the limitations of our own knowledge. If you had read my book, The Evolution of Intelligence, you understand that there are 8 different causal mechanisms of evolution, 4 of which promote genetic diversity, 4 of which select between existing gene population to determine which are going to be reproduced in subsequent generations. The key causal factor you're overlooking is called genetic drift, which occurs when a subpopulation of the human population is relatively isolated and confronts unique geographical weather conditions and the like, and has to adapt to survive, which has been the principal mechanism generating the races. Yeah. But in terms of mechanisms of genetic diversity, we have genetic mutation, we have sexual reproduction, We have genetic engineering. Ultimately, we also have genetic drift. The point I was making most importantly. And right. then among the mechanisms for selecting, we have natural selection, but we also have sexual selection, group selection, and ultimately artificial selection. Paul, most complaints about evolution are based upon simplified models that don't do justice to the phenomenon.
I was not expecting, but I should have known we were going to get a little tutorial. You see, but what you're doing is the same thing that many other people do. And I think Brian probably knows what I was referring to when I made my little statement, and I'm going to re-say it, all right? Most of what I've seen about evolution is simply this. Life conveniently already exists. These are our ideas. In other words, scientists, right? These are our ideas of how and why it works and propagates and spreads and moves on into the future, okay? All these things you're talking about is simply a way of saying life conveniently exists. Genes exist, right? This is how they drift. This is how they adapt. This is what they do. Well, wait a minute. Where did genes come from? Where did chromosomes come from? This is what I'm talking about. In other words, this is what you call the so-called organic evolution debate. And to me, you will never get me to believe that it's just some happenstance, some accident of increasing complexity based upon at the very root of what amino acid precursors, that's what they tell us. Right. That's why I'm saying it's just wonderful and fantastic. This is why there's a concept of God, because we can't understand it. And I don't think, to be honest with you, that we ever will. Now, it is this, and we can play with it. In other words, we can play with genes. We can play with chromosomes. We can play with life. But guess what? That's because it already exists. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but you're simply ignoring the fact that science is an ongoing enterprise. We're constantly explaining things we couldn't, Paul. We're constantly explaining things we haven't been able to explain in the past. And, you know, there's a lot of research on the circumstances why the conditions on Earth were auspicious for the development of primitive forms of life, single-celled organisms and the like. That eventually, through a very lengthy, complex process, led to the current forms of life on Earth. So I don't get it. It's like you're deliberately adopting a know-nothing, a cutoff on what we can know by positing God. How do you know God has a capacity to do anything? The existence of God isn't even something that's amenable to proof. It's an article of faith, Paul. So you're substituting an article of faith for scientific reasoning, because I embrace the ethics of belief, which maintains that always and everywhere, you're never entitled to hold a belief for which you do not have sufficient evidence. And since the existence of God is beyond the scope of scientific investigation, I am an agnostic. There may be an omnipotent, omniscient God who's transcendent and intervenes in human life, but it's not capable of proof.
But see, you're giving me these things like, okay, it's not a debate I wanted to have with you. I did not posit the existence of God. My statement was why I can understand the concept of a God, because there isn't any way to know so many of these things. Listen, I have not read your book. I may indeed do it. You may have a lot of stuff in there that may be of interest to me. But I did read years ago a book by Tim Barra, who is a professor of biology at Ohio State University. He wrote a book called Creationism, right? So he basically said the myth of creationism and the science of evolution, more or less it's the title. I could be butchering the title a little bit. It's been many, many years since I read it. I think it's called The Myth of Creationism and the Science of Evolution, roughly. Anyway, so this is a college professor of biology who wrote this book, and he was basically trying to, I guess, put the nail in the coffin of so-called creationism, kind of the same way that Richard Dawkins does. Well, guess what? I read the book, and this guy is full of shit, okay? He didn't do a very good job at all. I couldn't believe some of the examples that he used, right? And he didn't prove anything. You know, he just kept trouting out all these examples of what I just already said is life conveniently exists, and also the fossil record conveniently exists, so therefore we can make all these basic assumptions. But as has been shown time and time again, The fossil record has been lied about and doctored many times, right? There's been tremendous amounts of scandal and controversy within anthropology. Okay, many of these people have turned out to be frauds, you know, the fraud of the Peking man, the fraud of Piltdown man, and so on.
I do hold courses on science and pseudoscience using prod and archaeology as a basic. We got Johnny Seals who'd like to squeeze a word in edgewise before we have to conclude today's conversation. Johnny, go ahead. Lay it on us.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I tried calling in last Friday, and I must say this. This has nothing to do with the show. But guys like you, Fesser, and Paul, and Mitchell Buff, and Michael J., and you guys are some of the most honorable men I've ever met in my life, because whether we agree on everything we are trying to conclude it is happening in this world, I see that the fight for good men to reach a resolution in all of you, and I commend you all for that. But I must say, Paul, you are spot on, because evolution is like saying a baby raised itself. So a baby was just born and created, and the first time it cried, no animal scooped him up that night. I beg to differ.
Hey, Johnny, thanks for calling in with those kind words. And Paul and Brian, of course, as
always,
thanks for being here. We've run out for today, but we'll return to these topics, no doubt, in the near future. Thanks, everyone, for being here.
Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their